So welcome to Post Carbon Radio. Today our show is about the struggles of indigenous peoples, one that has been fairly well publicized in the United States, at least in the alternative media and Facebook, Standing Rock, and one not so well known in New Zealand. They are current examples of how indigenous communities are mobilizing to protect and preserve their lands, resources, and cultures from exploitation globally by the dominant culture. We have two guests today. On the phone in Muir Beach, we have Wendy Johnson, an ordained Zen Buddhist priest and dear friend. For more than 30 years, Wendy has been meditating and gardening at Green Gulch Farm Zen Center. She is one of the founders of the Organic Farm and Garden Program at Green Gulch and author of Gardening at the Dragon's Gate, At Work in the Wild and Cultivated World. 2 weeks ago, Wendy was called to participate at Standing Rock with a delegation of over 500 clergy of all faiths to be a nonviolent witnesses and be physically present in solidarity with thousands of water protectors who have gathered from all over the country to stop the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline that is crossing through the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation near Cannonball, North Dakota. Welcome to Post Carbon Radio, Wendy.
Thank you so much, Bing. I couldn't be happier, and really, what a gift to be with you this right here today.
Thank you.
And our other guest on the phone is Penny Opal Plant in Richmond. Penny Opal Plant is of Yaqui, Mexican, English, Dutch, Choctaw, Cherokee, and Algonquin ancestry, and is co-founder of Movement Rights. Penny has been an activist for over 30 years on anti-nuclear, environmental, and indigenous rights. Penny was just recently in New Zealand working with Movement Rights and the Maori people on their process of working with a government to recognize the rights of Te Uruwera, formerly a national park, and the Whanganui River, which now have more rights and standing under the law than human persons. She has been in close contact with friends and relatives at Standing Rock and is familiar with the situation there. Bing first met Penny with climate activists on the train going across the country to New York City to the huge climate march in September 2014, and we've interviewed her before on Post Carbon. Welcome back to our show, Penny.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be back here again. Thanks so much.
Well, let's start off with Wendy. Tell us a little bit about the Dakota Access Pipeline and what motivated you to go to Standing Rock.
Well, thank you for asking, Bing. I do want to say that I can certainly answer that question. And when it comes time to talk about what's happening in the heart of the camp, I really look forward to hearing from Penny. I'm quite aware that we do need to hear from people who've been on the front lines. And this is an indigenous-led movement, and I was honored and privileged as a minister in the Buddhist tradition to be able to be present and to stand with the water protectors at Standing Rock. So, but I think that it'll be wonderful to hear directly from Penny about that experience. You know, for me, the call coming from clergy concerned, and it's climate concerned clergy, was a very strong call. It was from a local Episcopal minister right on the ground at in Cannonball. He's lived there practicing and ministering to local parishioners in what is the sixth poorest county in the United States, a median income of $7,000. So when Father John called out and said, clergy, please come and stand with us, witness what's happening, we responded. He expected 100 people, more than 500 came. So, and we came on the turn of a dime. He called right around, the call went out right around the end of October. The action was on Thursday, November 3rd. We converged from all over the country, and then respectfully went and stood right at the edge and watched Dakota Access proceeding. It was a very powerful and disturbing experience for me. Very much done in prayer and solidarity, and I feel so privileged to have been able to be there and to see, and then of course to stay on a little bit longer and try to learn more and just be present with the circle of prayer, which is so strong right there now. Bing, I don't think I answered your question. I'm sorry. I'm just upwelling.
That's okay.
Forgive me. You can direct me, and I can behave a little bit better.
Okay.
I just am so grateful even to have this conversation right now. I've been feeling quite nuts. So it's very good to be able to be in conversation.
Yeah, since April of 2016, the Standing Rock Sioux have been protesting the construction.
Right.
It was originally planned to cross through north of Bismarck,
right.
But be concerns by the populace, it was rerouted through Indian country.
Right.
Yeah.
A familiar yes. move, and a terrifying one, given that the Ogallala Deep Reservoir and right there is one of the deepest and most important aquifers in this country, in North America. And to imagine the pipeline running under the body of the Missouri River it's really unimaginable, but it's definitely happening, dear friends. And I'm sure right now I feel it will even accelerate, and there's all the more prayer and presence needed.
Yes, there's so many issues involved. I think I think there's over 300 Native American tribes there in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux.
Right.
And and the struggle has been made even more challenging with Trump being president, taking office in 2 months, January of next year. And
right.
Him being a climate change denier, he said he would approve the Keystone Pipeline, which was ejected by Obama, and he's pledged to end the war on coal, approve more drilling for oil, vowing to cancel the Paris Climate Agreement.
Right.
And he's personally invested in the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Yeah. Skin in the game makes you an oily participant, and it does. And you know, it was wonderful to stand with clergy, primarily Christian, who were so up to date on the politics of the movement and so ready to speak truthfully and with a strong voice of prayer and presence, and also a strong voice of awareness of what is happening to creation right now. It was a very moving event for me to be present with so many people of the cloth.
So you were right there with the water protectors, and that's an interesting term. Usually they call these people protesters.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Bigger than that. It's far bigger than that is
yes.
what I saw
yes.
and experienced. So.
Did you see the militarized police?
We did.
Uh-huh.
We did, although, of course, you can be sure that with white clergy there, they stepped way back. And, in fact, the indigenous protectors of the waters thanked us for giving them a day of rest, because they've been menaced by drones and constant disruption of their prayerful camp. There's just been constant disruption, and with so many clergy coming from and notable, we had the head of the Unitarian Universalist movement with over 1,000 congregations in this country there, speaking directly to the water protectors. And, you know, one of the assistants to the Episcopal Minister of North America, Episcopal Church of North America, sorry not to have all the terminology quite lined up, but there were powerful people there, and so they were on their best behavior. The drillers were on their best behavior, but you could certainly see there was a long line of police and militarized police just waiting until we left. And that happened at 2:00 in the afternoon. They slapped on their riot gear and they were right there again.
Wendy, this is Karen. How long were you actually on site?
The invitation was to stand with Standing Rock for the day so that was on the 3rd of November, the day right after the Day of the Dead. We went in at dawn. We were there at 8 in the morning, and we left. We had permission from the police, which, you know, Father Floberg just went right to the front of the militarized police line 2 days before and said, I'm asking. I want to let you know that clergy's coming from all over the country. We're going to stand. And so he negotiated. He promised that there would be peaceful negotiation, prayerful presence, and, got permission, horrible even for him to have to do that, to ask, to be able to stand there. But We were in the camp, but then we were directly on the front line, which was quite powerful, for 6 hours of prayer and chanting and different people speaking and offering their heartfelt connection and also prayers for the stopping. Not, you know, it was not vague prayer. It was very definitely that the pipeline not even be diverted, but that it be stopped,
mm-hmm.
that we listen to the voice. And then a smaller contingent left the actual demonstration or prayer vigil at Standing Rock and went to the governor's mansion in Bismarck and actually got to see the governor and mentioned to him, "We know you're a man of the church, and this has got to be going against your faith, what you're allowing to happen on your land." So, you know, direct connection with the governor, and some 19 clergy were jailed for not moving from the courthouse. So it was on site. We, as promised, we were very peaceful and in an attitude of prayer and you know, dedicated and strong prayer. But on the sides for that one day, they were a little bit stronger presence. So to get one full day Thursday, but many of us stayed on, came earlier and stayed on later to help in whatever way we can as allies.
And now that you've been there and clergy, it sounds like either from all over the country or certainly representing congregations all over the country. We're going to move quickly because we don't have a lot of time.
Right,
but can you tell us a little bit about
the call?
No, about what you all are planning to do now that you're back, or
right.
those of you who are back, and
well,
when you get out of jail, if you're still.
All of us made the pledge to address our congregations and then to reach out, and that was from the water protectors really asking us to use our influence. So many of the churches made formal statements against the pipeline and formal statements in their preference that we proceed in a prayerful way and that we stop this pipeline. And I think pretty much every tradition made the commitment to go back and to carry the word out and to encourage people to be more alert and alive. And I think these are activist congregations,
mm-hmm.
so it was very inspiring. And a number of the ministers and the clergy were young, which was really encouraging for me, too, to see.
Great. Well, thank you for that on-the-ground report of just a couple weeks ago, Wendy. And now we'd like to bring Penny Opal Plant into the conversation. Penny, first of all, you just got back from New Zealand on, I think, what you called a 45-hour Sunday. So welcome back.
Thank you.
And just a couple other things that are a little bit out of the way, but there were these big earthquakes that just happened. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I do. First, I just want to quickly address something that the religious leaders did at the camp that Wendy didn't mention, but that for me as an Indigenous person was so powerful, and that was the denouncing the doctrine of discovery, from which everything rolled out against our Indigenous peoples of the Americas. And that, for me, was extremely moving. It brought tears to my eyes. It was such a powerful thing to witness. And so I just want to thank Wendy and all the other clergy that were there that day that participated in all the many ways that they did. And then jumping back to New Zealand, so the earthquake happened while we were flying from Auckland home, and we were in the North Island. The earthquake was in the South Island. But there were a lot of people from New Zealand on the plane, and as soon as we touched down, people started finding out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so just, you know, continue to send all of our prayers that way, and it was a huge earthquake. I didn't check this morning to see if the death toll went up, but I think it was only 2 as of late last night. Yeah, it was interesting that it happened when we were in the air.
And then the other thing that sort of happened while you were gone was we had another little earthquake over here.
Yeah.
How did the U.S. presidential election play in New Zealand?
Well, people are horrified. Pretty much everyone that talked to us were horrified about what happened. And I did buy the newspaper the next day there, and it's a whole giant front page article about why Trump flourished, but the three letters next to his giant face that's half a fold is WTF. Mm-hmm. And so they framed it like that. And so that was interesting, you know, to leave the United States. It was kind of one country, and to come back and it was kind of another country. And then after thinking about it and processing it for a day, I realized that it's just the exact same country, just that the veil got pulled further off.
Mm-hmm.
And because for people of color, indigenous people, you know, we've experienced, I think, what our other fellow country people now are experiencing, and that is a shock that people of color have experienced all their lives. And so I'm holding it in a place of it being very, very interesting and seeing how many people it has mobilized. The one thing that concerns me quite a bit is that this is a time for us all to search for common ground among all of us, among people that some folks consider to be their enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have time for that anymore.
Right.
Our enemy, but personally speaking for myself, my enemy is never a person.
Mm.
Doesn't matter who that person is and what they have done or what damage they're causing. My enemy is the colonial way of thinking that has allowed all of these harms to happen. And so I've been, you know, reading a lot, both when I was in New Zealand and now that I'm home. And some of the folks that voted for Trump are not invested in the racism that's being unveiled. They voted for him for a lot of different reasons that don't include that, which I can understand. People who are locked into this system that is actually working exactly the way it was supposed to from the very first day the Constitution was written. They only see this, you know, kind of black and white situation. And so what's being called on all of us right now, with Indigenous people leading the way with what Standing Rock is accomplishing and what it symbolizes and signals to the rest of us, is that the entire system needs to shift.
That's really true.
And that's what a lot of the Trump supporters wanted as well, was the entire system needs to shift.
Yeah, it's interesting, a lot of common ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Penny, let's get into movement rights and the work you were doing with the Maori people on their process of working with the government to recognize the rights of a national park and a river there.
Right. So our organization, I've worked with Shannon Biggs and Movement Rights. It's just going to be 2 years old next month. We work with Indigenous and municipal communities to rewrite the laws, or with tribes to help them rewrite their constitutions using the rights of nature, or I prefer rights of Mother Earth language, which protects the environment in which people live. And the Maori people are the indigenous people of New Zealand, and they have a very, very different, they were colonized in a much different way than folks in the Americas were. And so they have a different type of relationship with the crown there. They're one of the crowned governments. And so the tribes are called Iwis, and there was a agreement in 1903. It wasn't a treaty. It was an agreement. There was a Maori agreement and a crown agreement about how the two different peoples would function together on that land. And the agreement from 1903 was never ratified by the crown, which turned out to be a good thing, according to many of the people we spoke to, because at this point they would need to be unraveling some of that agreement. And so what they've done is the crown is working to create settlements with all of the iwis in New Zealand, because they understand that there were these agreements were broken. The first agreement was broken, and so these settlement agreements they've been going on for a number of years. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly the number, but the iwis are working with the Crown government to decide what happens with their territory, with their people, and so on. So the two agreements that we went there to look at were the Te Uewera agreement about a national park that is the Tuhoe people, and the Whanganui River agreement, which includes several iwis from the mountain to the river, to the ocean along the river. So what the Tuhoe people negotiated was just, I can't even think of a word. It was just so powerful, and it is a model for all of us to look at, both of the agreements. So in Tuhoe, they worked, they listened and listened and listened to all the things that the Crown was proposing.
And this is the British Crown, just to be clear, we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that the Crown proposed was to go to Australia to look at the how the Australian government worked with the indigenous people in Kakadu, which is a World Heritage Park. And so they sent a delegation over there, not to ask the leadership, but to ask the people, is that working for you?
Mm-hmm.
And the people said, no, do not do that here. So they came back and they listened and listened some more to the Crown. And another idea was the agreement between the Crown in Canada and the people in Nunavut at the Arctic Circle. And they asked the people, and the people said the same thing, no, do not do it like this. So at the end of a three-year period, finally, with the Crown proposing many different concepts, they finally asked the leadership of the Maori in that area, well, what do you want? And they proposed to take Te Uewera out of the concept of private property and give it legal standing under the law as a separate living entity, which includes the sacred rights of that land. So that's the first time that anything like that has ever happened in the world.
Wow.
Amazing.
It's very powerful.
Wonderful.
And so then we went to see the folks along the Whanganui, and they essentially negotiated the same thing for the river from the mountain from which it flows all the way to the ocean. And so the way these agreements work is that there's a Maori representative and a Crown representative, and they are the voice of the river and Te Uewera. I'm mispronouncing that. It's hard for me to say. But that's how it will work. So these settlements are moving forward. They include a lot more for the people in those two areas, but that was the reason that Shannon and I went over to New Zealand, was to study these. And then, coincidentally, I was sitting on the airplane coming back next to two women who work in Wellington. One is an environmental engineer, and the other one works in health. And they asked me what I was doing over there, and I explained it to them. And they said that they are also doing some similar things, but not as part of the settlement process, where the people are looking to the Maori people to look forward into how to protect the earth, air, water, and soil for future generations. And so what's happened in New Zealand is that there's a shifting culture where the people are realizing that things they have to change in order for us to survive, and they're starting to work together. So that's very different than what we have here in the United States at this time.
Yeah.
We're in the process of a giant shift of culture. And when I talk about Standing Rock, I talk about it being what it is, which is vitally important and very, very powerful, and bringing up all the treaty rights that have been violated, bringing up the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, which is being violated, and, you know, standing on solid legal ground is really important to what's happening there. But it's also a symbol for everyone around the world, and it's a signal to all of us to look at where our water and our air and our soil is being desecrated, mm-hmm. wherever we are. And that's a message that our Idle No More SSA group has been saying from, you know, for months and months, that and that in the last couple of months, Standing Rock has come out and said it as well. You know, when I think when folks had a chance to grab some air and actually stand up and look around and say, yeah, it's not just about us. It's about all of us everywhere, because it's going to take all of us standing together for the water, air, soil, and future generations.
And we have the technology now to coordinate across continents and lands. I think we need to take a little break.
Yes. And now we'd like to open up our phone lines.
Except that we have two people on the line.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I know. Sometimes real-time radio.
Darn.
We would love to hear from people. Wonder if there's a way they could send us emails.
Yeah.
Anyway, we don't have a good solution. We'll let you know if we do.
Let's figure out a way we
can
do that.
And I'm very happy to step back and free a line if you'd like. This is Wendy speaking. So, you know, just so that people can communicate and phone in. So just let me know, because that's as important as anything right now that we'd be able to.
Well, if we did that, Wendy, is there something you'd want to just, is there a thought you want to leave us with, the biggest message that came for you as having been at Standing Rock recently?
Well, I have to say that for me what was most powerful was the commitment to prayer and to action, and not to see each other as enemies, to be present. Yes, and I'm really happy that Bonnie mentioned about the doctrine of discovery. Not only did the elders around the Council Fire burn that document with they agreed that they wanted to do it. The clergy handed them the document. They burned it, not in the central fire, but in a fire in the open bowls and shells. They burned that document, and then as we passed out of the camp to go right to the front lines, all of the staging and the smoke that was wafted over everyone came from the burning of that document and fresh sage added. And that seemed incredibly powerful to me, and appropriate and strong, that we would be gathered in solidarity, not wasting our time figuring out who was the enemy, and just speaking, not only speaking, but listening to the voice of the river and the voice of the land. And it was deeply and widely audible. I'll say that. I felt that in every with every step. I felt that the voice of the land and the commitment to be part of not only the action but the listening.
And Wendy, is there a place where listeners can tune in to you to keep track of what you're up to? Are you on Facebook?
No, okay. I have no screen presence. I'm an on the ground spook, just in the garden, just by taking care of their gardens and by standing and listening to what I can hardly talk. I'm so moved by what I'm hearing about the Maori rights. So let's let people have access to your station. Thank you for including me.
Thank you, Wendy, so much for joining us and going to Standing Rock.
It was an honor. Thank
yes.
you.
Now we're going to open up our phone lines. You can give us a call at 415-663-8492. That's 415-663-8492. I'd like to talk a little bit more about the doctrine of discovery, because I first learned about it this year. I'd never heard of it, really. As I understand it, that it the Pope in the late 1490s issued a edict saying that the countries like Spain, Italy, other Catholic countries could come to these new lands that were being discovered, and essentially saying, we discovered it, and that land is ours. Is that how you understand it, Penny?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. And not only that, but the pretty much it was all of the royal families of Europe who were associated with the Pope, and it gave them permission to take the land if they didn't find any Christians. Of course, they didn't find any Christians here. That religion started in the Middle East, and to do whatever they wanted with our people. So that paved the road for genocide, slavery, torture, cruelty, for everything that has happened in the United States, that from the very beginning, the boarding schools, the reservations, everything comes out of the Doctrine of Discovery. The Doctrine of Discovery was the foundation for manifest destiny of the United States. That's where that goes back to. So it's this very long line of thinking that, you know, originally the thought was that we weren't even human beings. You know, we're not even human.
Mm-hmm.
And that we could be treated how, you know, like people at that time treated their livestock or their animals. And so it took Luther Standing Bear going into a court in the 1800s to say, I am a man. I am a human. I am a man. For that finally to get, you know, registered within the court system. That was the first step of him doing that, saying that. Even though there were these negotiations with tribal leaders and, there, you know, that resulted in treaties, the United States has violated every single treaty, which is in violation of its own constitution. And so, yes, all of that rolled out of the Catholic Church.
We have a caller on the line. It's Constance Washburn. Hi, Constance.
Hi, Ping.
Tell us what you're doing. You're going to go to Standing Rock and take supplies up there to those folks that are staying there. I think there are about 5,000 people there, and they've got to stay there through the winter.
Winter, right. So a group of friends in the East Bay are putting together a caravan. We've got two RVs and a couple cars and pickup trucks. We've got a garage full of clothing that's all set and been cleaned and sorted and ready to go. So we're looking for more supplies that are needed. And the things that are most needed are the 0-degree sleeping bags and high quality tents that can withstand the winds, small propane heaters with automatic shutoff, winter clothing, propane stoves, wood stoves, eyewash for tear gas, earplugs for shockwaves, chainsaws, axes, leather work gloves, chests of meat. I thought, ooh, Point Reyes and West Marin should be able to do that one. So we're collecting this stuff, and I'm still looking for a place in Point Reyes to be able to have people deposit things. Hopefully, but we don't have that yet. So if anybody knows of a place, it's central with easy access. It would be open and a place for people to collect stuff in Point Reyes. RT's Indian restaurant in Lagunitas has said that they'll take stuff. So they have right in front of their, they have an overhang in front of the restaurant, and they'll be taking stuff, and then I'll be packing it up to my house.
So how do people contact you, Constance, if they have a great idea for where to?
Okay, they can contact me at 415-686-5400. Or ConstanceWashburn@gmail.com.
Great.
And there's also a website on, there's a GoFundMe website. We're raising money to help with this whole caravan operation and to buy things like they asked for gas cards from the local gas company that's near Standing Rock so they can go get gas and things like that, which we'd have to get there. Can't bring that.
And what's the name of the GoFundMe? Because I know there are some fake sites that have been put up, and people have to be careful to give money to real sites.
Right. This has been put up by one of the people who's helping to coordinate the caravan that's going from Oakland, Alex Zobel, and it's called Winter Supplies for Standing Rock, of which there are a bunch of sites that say that, but it's the one by Alex Zobel from Elsa Bronte, and it's called Winter Supplies for Standing Rock.
Could you spell that last name?
Z-O-B-E-L, Alex Zobel.
Okay.
And it's Winter Supplies for Standing Rock at GoFundMe.com, I say.
Great.
And, yeah, and if people have questions, they can contact me or ask me. So
one more time, Constance, your number, 415-686-5400.
Great. And, yeah.
Thank you, Constance.
Temperature clothes, heaters, small wood stoves.
Is the list of desirable items up at that GoFundMe as well?
Yes, it is.
Great. Okay, so people can look more for information there. Thanks so much for calling.
And thanks for going there and taking these supplies. I think if you want to donate to Standing Rock, the folks staying there through the winter, I think there, if you probably Google donations to Standing Rock water protectors, you can find some information. How about...
Penny probably knows.
Penny, do you know some... how to donate money to the Standing Rock?
Yeah, I would suggest the Sacred Stone Camp.
Yeah.
You can go right to their page and donate there, or the Red Warrior Camp, or the Ocheti Shakoan Camp. Like, if you just go right to their pages, mm-hmm. then, or to the Standing Rock tribe.
Can you spell the Ocheti Shakoan? Because I know that goes out over air, and I never get it in time.
Yeah, it's O-C-E... T-I-S-A-K-O-W-I-N. I'm pretty sure that's right.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that. O-C-E-T-I-S-A-K-O-W-I-N. That's the name of the camp?
Yeah, that's cool. It.
Okay, mm-hmm. great.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling in, Constance.
You're welcome. It's very exciting. It's all sort of coming together in very magical ways. So it feels like there's just so much energy and so much support that people are wanting to send to Standing Rock. And I feel like what the Indigenous people are doing there is just such a model for all of us to bring the sacred dove to the earth and really stand for what we have to protect. I get teary.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We're going to open the phone line for other callers, so thanks for calling Candace. Okay.
That line to call in to KWMR Post Carbon is 415-663-8492. That's 415-663-8492. Let's get back to Penny. Tell us a little more. It looks like what's happening in New Zealand is really... I haven't heard much of that happening with using the rights of Mother Nature. It seems like a precedent. Is that happening in any other countries with Indigenous peoples?
Evo Morales in Bolivia passed the rights of Mother Earth law, and the country of Ecuador put it into their constitution in 2010, I believe. And there are over 180 municipalities here in the United States that have rights of nature ordinances. And so this has been a process that's been happening for just about 10 years. And the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund started out with these types of ordinances that also rescind the corporate personhood rights on a local level. And, of course, this is lawmaking through civil disobedience here in the United States, because those ordinances, which do not go through city councils, do not go through counties, because then they could be rescinded easily. But when they're voted on by the people, they cannot be rescinded without another vote. But those bump up against state and federal law. And so what happens then is what we saw happen in Colorado and New Mexico, where the people on the ground voted to on these fracking bans. What a lot of folks don't realize is that along with many of those types of fracking bans or bans on giant hog farms or whatever, that there's also rights of nature language in those ordinances, most of them.
I did not know that.
Yes, and so then what happens is the state, or like in Colorado, it was the state legislature that passed a law to make those bans illegal. So it's an interesting process, because in the United States, citizens are led to believe that they live in a democracy,
right?
And so what passing these local ordinances does is show people that, well, okay, so let's see if we live in a democracy. And then when the state or the feds come down on that, then it not only educates all the people that voted for that ordinance, but all the people in that surrounding area. Because they suddenly, the veil is pulled away, and people realize, oh, well, we don't really have a democracy. If I don't get to decide what happens in my own backyard or next to my children's school or next to where my elder grandmother or grandmother is staying in a facility, then we don't have a democracy.
Yeah, that's the second time you've said pull the veil away. It does seem like our politics are getting a little more naked these days. And it also reminds me of the marijuana laws, the same thing, that you pass a local law enabling something, but the federal law still stands. And then it comes down to a struggle of whether the feds are really going to use the power of the federal government against the democratic wishes of people locally.
Right.
We have another caller on the line, Molly Brown. Hi, Molly. Where are you calling from?
Mari.
I just wanted to ask Penny. We met at that tribunal a couple of years ago. I don't know if you remember me. But
your name's familiar, Molly. Yeah.
Yes. I have kind of a deep philosophical question that I've been looking at myself. I've been reading Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Kimmerer, and very inspired by that book. And sort of what is that essential break that has caused people of European ancestry and people of in history, Europeans, to think that they could just go into a land and take over? What is that essential error or break, or I'm not quite sure what to call it?
That's a great question, Molly, and it's a question I started asking when I was in the third grade, and saying, what happened here? This is not the way it's supposed to be. And so through many years of studying different things, my opinion on it is that the first people to be colonized on Mother Earth were the people who came out of what is now called the agricultural revolution in the Middle East. And those were the first people to be forced to work for food, right? Before that, we were all tribal communities. We worked together to be fed, clothed, et cetera. And that spread out from that Fertile Crescent in all the directions in that area. And so when I look at it that way, I see that the people in Asia and not all of Asia and not all of Europe, because there still are tribal traditional communities with their original instructions in all those areas. But wherever the colonizing went, people were forced to step out of the original instructions that we were all given at the beginning of our time here on how to live in harmony and balance in a reciprocal and respectful way within the natural laws of Mother Earth. And so I think that from that perspective, we are all indigenous to Mother Earth's belly, of course. If we go back far enough in our genetic lines, we all come from people that had these original instructions. And so for people who were colonized thousands and thousands of years ago, it takes being quiet a little bit more time to reconnect with that genetic memory and those ancestors for that information to come through. And I speak about it that way because I get my instructions in a spiritual way. Like, I have not been to Standing Rock because my instructions have not told me to go there. So I've been working on the ground, you know, pretty much wherever I'm at, on assisting and organizing for my friends and relatives at Standing Rock. And so getting information that way is a part of being decolonized. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that the colonizing movement, it seems to be a real breaking point. And I see it on the national scene now with the, you know, Trump's election. Of course, it was there before. As you were saying, the veil has just been pulled away. And the, you know, utter sense of disconnection and the utter sense of ego and separation from life and other fellow human beings is profound. It's just profound.
Thanks for calling in, Molly.
Sure.
Or again, if you'd like to call us, the number is 415-663-8492. That's 415-663-8492. I'd like to quote an Ecuadorian indigenous person who came to visit Standing Rock. She says, "The world needs indigenous people. The statistics say that we are 4% of the world's population, but we are protecting more than 80% of the world's biodiversity." Would you like to add to that, Penny?
Well, that is the truth, as much as I've heard from it. And we do have, you know, I'm also a signer of the Indigenous Women of the Americas Defending Mother Earth Treaty, which I could talk about at another time if you want to have me back. But there are treaty sisters in Ecuador who are indigenous, who are working really hard to try to save their territories from the fossil fuel industry. And especially in Yasuni, which is the most biodiverse area left in the world.
Mm-hmm. And it's a national park in Ecuador, right?
Right, uh-huh. And which now has plant drilling going into it by two Chinese fossil fuel corporations. So even though Ecuador passed the rights of Mother Earth into law in their constitution there, they're violating their own laws, like in the United States is violating its own laws in so many ways, and still doing that. So I just go back to it's a shift in culture. So we still have these powerful, intact indigenous communities around the world that still have the science, because it is science. It is not spirituality, although it contains that. It is not philosophy, although it contains that. It is indigenous science that dictates to intact traditional indigenous communities around the world how they are to be within the natural laws of this planet.
And go ahead.
I'll just be really brief. So because they still have that, they're where they've been able to fight to keep their territories free, they still have the most biodiverse places left on Earth.
I'd like to get in now to November 15th, Tuesday, November 15th. There's a number of actions planned to highlight what's happening at Standing Rock, if you want to stand in solidarity, and protesting the banks, the financial institutions that are funding the Dakota Access Pipeline. I know, Penny, tell us about what's happening in San Francisco.
Yeah, so it's going to be very, very big. There's over 2,000 people that have signed up on the Facebook Evite, and that's just that one invitation. We will be coming together at 6:30 tomorrow morning, November 15th, at Civic Center Plaza in San Francisco, where we'll have prayers and blessings, and then we will also have a rally and walk, probably in prayer, to the Army Corps of Engineers, where there will be another rally and direct action there. And so the Facebook invitation is at the Idle No More SFA Facebook page, and today is the National Call-In Day. To call in to government representatives, to call in to the banks about Standing Rock. And that information is also on the Idle No More SFA Facebook page.
And for tomorrow's action, there's a call to wear blue with water, right?
Right, that's right. Thank you. I always forget that. Thank you so much. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it tomorrow.
Here are some other actions happening in San Rafael. At Citibank, 666 3rd Street, that's right near the transit station there, next to the transit center. That's from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. That's at the San Rafael Transit Center, the Citibank, right across the street. Tuesday, November 15th, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. And in Novato, at 4:30 on the sidewalk next to City Hall at 901 Sherman Avenue, Novato. And in Point Reyes Station, we have an action happening in front of the Wells Fargo Bank, and that's from 12 to 2 to stand with the water protectors in North Dakota. Wells Fargo is one of the top four banks to loan the Dakota Access money to construct the pipeline. $467 million. The whole pipeline is, I think, $3.7 billion. So Dakota Access is proposing almost a 1,200-mile-long crude pipeline through North Dakota, Iowa, South Dakota, Iowa, and Illinois, and that'll threaten their air, water, land, and property rights, and, of course, affect our climate if we don't keep it in the ground. So those events again in San Francisco at City Plaza, San Rafael at Citibank, across from the San Rafael Transit Center, Novato at City Hall at 4:30, and in Point Reyes Station from 12 to 2. We're going to wrap it up.
I got one more to announce. Okay. There's also a demonstration in Santa Rosa, if you're in Sonoma County. It's 5:30 to 7:30. I assume this is also tomorrow at the corner of 4th and Mendocino. Bring your signs and tell your friends. More information is at 707-795-1044. That's tomorrow in Santa Rosa at 5:30, 4th and Mendocino.
Penny, can you give us some final words and tell us your websites?
Yes, it's movementright.org, and I just invite everyone to join us in standing together, looking toward this beautiful future that we can create that has clean air, water, and soil for my grandson's great-great-great-grandchildren. Thanks for having me so much on the show. Thanks, Bing.
Thank you, Penny. Take care now.
And that does it for another episode of Post Carbon Radio.
And you can listen to all our programs. They're archived at wmpostcarbon.com. wmpostcarbon.com.
All right, we're out. Stand by for Cruisin' with Rick Clark.
I'm trying to spread the word about this immense issue, but I find it absurd why so many people are confused. Some people don't understand the weight of this problem. Act now before it gets out of hand, cause Earth is calling. I was 10 years old, exposed to it. The inconvenient truth really made me concerned how it was going to affect the youth. The temp is still rising from the pollution we produce. We need to start striving for a solution to reduce. When we burn fossil fuels like coal and gasoline, we're using dirty energies when we should be using clean. When we burn, we're adding to the greenhouse effect. CO2, CH4, and N2O collect in our atmosphere. They remain up there for years and years, absorbing sun rays that come near. But we need to persevere, cause this makes our planet's temp rise fast. So why can't we find a way to cut back on our greenhouse gas?
We have waited too long. Act now before the moment's gone. The situation's tough, but stay strong until we see the dawn.
The climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind. Climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind. The climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind. The climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind.
The most abundant greenhouse gas is carbon dioxide beats a methane, nitrous oxide, and the F gases by landslide. Everyone releases it when they drive, unless you have an electric ride. It's almost 400 parts per million.